Good afternoon, and thanks so much for listening to Aspen Public Radio. I'm Wyatt Orm. I'm a reporter. I'm here in the station with Claire Woodcock, who's our arts and culture reporter. It is our 2017 Summer Pledge Drive. We are here at the station awaiting your call. Give us a call, 920-9000, or visit us online, aspenpublicradio.org.
Because how many times have you said to a friend, I was listening to Aspen Public Radio and heard this story? That's what Aspen Public Radio is all about. The stories, news, and insights that make you stop and think and start your own conversations. There's something new to share every day, whether it's a surprising analysis on Mountain Edition, an inspiring guest on Valley Roundup, or an insight into politics from All Things Considered. It's radio you want everyone you know to hear, and it's radio that exists thanks to the generous support of listeners like you.
Give us a call, 920-9000, or visit us online, aspenpublicradio.org. Good afternoon, it's Mountain Edition. I'm Wyatt Orm.
And I'm Claire Woodcock. A near-death experience is the inspiration for a kombucha brewing business.
It's time for young birds in the Roaring Fork Valley to spread their wings.
We talk with the man behind the Mid-Valley Tree Farm development.
And we listen in as a few of the 169 pianos from the Aspen Music Festival and School are tuned.
Those stories and more coming up on Mountain Edition.
Mountain Rescue Aspen volunteers will resume their search for a climber who went missing last September. News director Carolyn Zachariasen reports.
New Mexico resident David Cook was last seen September 20th near Maroon Lake. He's believed to have climbed either the Maroon Bells or Pyramid Peak. Crews searched on the ground and from the air last fall and again on July 6th, but found no sign of Cook. Jeff Edelson is president of Mountain Rescue Aspen, a nonprofit that works for the Pitkin County Sheriff's Office. He says both agencies are committed to Cook's recovery.
The sheriff met with the family after last year, and I think he committed to the family that we would go out and do what we could safely to try and help bring closure. We don't like to leave anybody, you know, out there type thing.
Crews will utilize dogs in the next effort and expect to reach places previously inaccessible due to snow cover. Carolyn Zachariasen, Aspen Public Radio News.
Colorado's rivers received their first ever report cards from an environmental organization last week, and it's a mixed bag. Elizabeth Stewart-Severy reports.
Conservation Colorado assessed the 8 major river basins in the state, and only the Yampa, which runs through the northwest corner of the state, received top marks. Major diversions, dams, and low flows led to the D grade for the Colorado River. The report says current demands on the river are not sustainable. The largest basin in the state, the Arkansas, earned a C. While it's famous for trout fishing and rafting, the Arkansas is polluted by heavy metals from mining operations and also sees lowered flows because of diversions. There's a link to the full report at our website. Elizabeth Stewart-Severy, Aspen Public Radio Environment Desk.
Last week, the Garfield County Commissioners approved a question to go on the November 2017 ballot. It would raise property taxes to create a museum and historic preservation fund. Wyatt spoke with producer Kristen Kay about what that tax would do if voters approved it.
It would raise money for the 7 historical societies in Garfield County, and all of them are struggling financially. The manager of the Glenwood Railroad Museum was at the meeting, and he got up and basically told commissioners that the museum can't pay its rent.
Should we be unable to raise the necessary funds, it is very likely that the Glenwood Railroad Museum will close at the end of this calendar year.
I spoke with Matt Annabelle, and he's on the board of the Mount Sopras Historical Society in Carbondale. And he basically said that all the historical societies in the county are all running on fumes. He said that Mount Sopras in particular has never had a period of more than 3 months where they had funding for their one part-time staff member.
So how would the historical societies use the money from this new property tax?
Well, one thing it would do is it would allow them to hire more part-time employees. This would also allow them to pay for some upgrades and to acquire new artifacts, to expand their programming. There'd also be money set aside to apply for additional grants.
Give us some details about the property tax.
If you own a house, $3.24 of every $100,000 of assessed value will be charged. That's for each year. And it goes up if you own a business. It's about $13 for businesses. And for the oil and gas industry, it's just under $40. There is a 10-year sunset on the current ballot language. If voters approve this, The fund will be created for a period of 10 years, at which point it'll go back to the voters and they'll decide if they want to keep it in place.
So the Garfield County commissioners haven't exactly been the most enthusiastic about new taxes.
They really haven't. Here's Commissioner John Martin. He's been on the board for over 2 decades and he has never supported raising taxes. Not for the RAFTA, not for open space and trails, not for schools.
I have yet to find something that qualifies that I can support for a mill levy increase, because I am the biggest anti-government tax person up at this board. But I found something.
One thing he said is museums benefit everyone, and that's one reason why he was willing to make an exception and to support this mill levy. There's an economic argument to be made for putting money into historic preservation. There's something called heritage tourism. It's about a $7 billion industry in Colorado. So investing in historic preservation could be good business.
Hayden Dugley hawks his locally brewed kombucha every week at the Basalt Farmers Market. He sends his customers off with a friendly, "To your health," his new motto in step with his new lease on life. Allison Bektesh reports.
The idea for elevated elixirs hit Hayden Dudley pretty hard. Actually, Dudley hit the ground. A failed paragliding launch from the summit of Half Dome in Yosemite sent him crashing into the mountainside. He broke bones, including his neck and sternum, injuries that have a slim survival rate. In a 2015 essay published in Hang Gliding magazine, he blamed the accident on a series of ego-driven poor decisions.
I wanted to be the man. It took a certain man to get himself into that position, and he died. I left him there, along with my attachment to glory. Scaring friends and family with my near-death experience was the ultimate eye-opener. Sometimes life isn't worth living if you're only in it for yourself.
Dudley relied on natural remedies during his recovery and began to think about returning to the Roaring Fork Valley, where the health culture is vibrant, but the kombucha market lacking.
It surprised me that Aspen, a place that's the forefront of ideas and culture and health, didn't have a kombucha brewery. So I figured that the niche would fit perfectly here, which it has so far.
The Elevated Elixirs tent is now a prominent fixture of the Basalt Sunday Market. Dominic Smith is Dudley's friend and employee number one. The pair spend a lot of their time just explaining to shoppers what kombucha is.
Kombucha is a probiotic health tonic made from fermented sweetened tea.
What's in it?
Turmeric, habanero, garlic, ginger, lion's mane.
And what health benefits it brings.
It aids digestion, boosts metabolism, enhances your immunity, great for rheumatic pains, great for hangovers, it's good for anti-anxiety.
The elixirs are brewed in what they call the lab at Aspen Highlands. Kombucha's health benefits derive from the living, growing bacteria culture that gives the drink its taste and its fizz, but runs counter to typical health department standards.
We have to do everything that you're told not to do in terms of food service, where we're letting something go bad, essentially, and that's what makes it good.
The guys then mix in fruit for flavor and additional natural remedies, ginger or turmeric root. There's even the option to get CBD dropped into the drink. The non-psychoactive oil comes from a hemp farm in Palisade, Colorado. Though it's just in its first year distributing, Elevated Elixirs is already in 20 locations on tap throughout the valley and has cracked into the Denver market. Smith knew Dudley before his accident and has seen him transform into the businessman he is today.
He just continues to evolve, just like the product that is a living organism that sort of grows with us. To see a friend, over the course of like 7 years to go through so many different experiences and to really make something special in such a special place.
Dudley's ego is still present, but now it's not personal glory he seeks. Instead, he thinks he can make things better for others. He hopes the potions that rejuvenated him through recovery and self-discovery will help others as well.
Cheers, you guys. To your health. See me next week.
Allison Bektesh, Aspen Public Radio News.
This is Mountain Edition on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Wyatt Orm. Stay in the know with what's happening in the Roaring Fork Valley and beyond through our social media channels. Follow Aspen Pub Radio on Twitter, follow us on Instagram, and like us on Facebook for your news updates, compelling images, and intriguing stories. Aspen Public Radio, your news, your music, your station.
And it's our summer pledge drive, which means that everyone here at the station is waiting to take your calls to hear why you support Aspen Public Radio.
One thing that Aspen Public Radio has is a terrific website. Not only can you find every story that you hear in the morning or the afternoon on our website, you can also go on and listen to the hours of content that we've brought you from the Aspen Ideas Festival, the McCloskey Speaker Series.
You can live stream our morning edition and All Things Considered programming.
That's right. So there's so much to be thankful for as far as our website goes. Log on to aspenpublicradio.org. And you can make a pledge there. Also, give us a call here at the station, 920-9000. The Aspen Art Museum accepted the 2017 National Medal for Museum and Library Service this week. The institution is one of 10 in the nation to receive this award.
This is considered the highest recognition the federal government awards to museums and libraries for service in their communities. Heidi Zuckerman is the Aspen Art Museum's director and CEO.
Our outreach was the only one that had called out specific recognition, support, collaboration with the Latino community.
Governor John Hickenlooper was in Aspen earlier this summer to celebrate the museum's achievement.
Secretary of Homeland Security John Kelly spoke about the future of his department at a gathering of the nation's top security experts in Aspen. Elizabeth reports.
Kelly spoke about new challenges facing the Department of Homeland Security in the two decades since 9/11, including sophisticated electronic devices.
There are people out there, very smart people, very sophisticated people, who do nothing but trying to figure out how to blow up an airplane in flight.
He says the answer is improved technology, including advanced scanners at airports, facial recognition software at ports of entry, and modernized passports across the world.
The attempt, just like with aviation security, has raised the bar for the world.
The Aspen Security Forum continues through Saturday with speakers including CIA Director Mike Pompeo and Director of National Intelligence Daniel Coates. For NPR, I'm Elizabeth Stewart-Severy in Aspen, Colorado.
The man behind a controversial development in the Mid-Valley may be as passionate about it as his foes and his supporters. Ace Lane says his tree farm project is rooted in a desire to put a roof over local families' heads. Weeks before the project won approval, Wyatt toured the property with Ace.
Ace Lane and I are walking across his wetlands. His property has over 9 acres of them, which he constructed. He likes to bring people down here, especially on summer evenings.
You just sit here, there's people water skiing on the lake, you know, you can watch them. Nothing interrupts anything else, it all sort of works together.
Ace bought the 200-acre property in 1990, and friends scratched their heads. It was a beat-up cattle ranch. And it was far away from Aspen, they said.
People thought this was Nebraska. Like, why would you want to buy a place way out here, Ace? I'm like, so cool. I said, I love it.
One of the first things he did was dig the water skiing lake. It's long and narrow and sandwiched between the wetlands and the highway. If you've never heard of Kodiak Lake,
perfect. Just the way I wanted it.
It's tucked away and surrounded by trees. That's the other reason he bought the property. He runs a landscaping business, and he's planted over 40,000 trees, which he sells to his clients.
I don't show these to a lot of people.
Ace's home is a quarter mile up the road from the ski lake. In the hillside behind the house, he's dug an earthen room. Inside are a collection of bonsai trees.
This is a bald cypress, and this is a redwood, and he's over 180 years old. Truly, this is the baseline inspiration for a lot of what I do.
To understand why, you need to first understand why his body is completely covered in scars. When he was 12, he and a friend almost died in a welding accident.
And like, what were you guys welding?
A piece of steel. Trying to unlock it from another piece of steel, and we were not having success with it, and things went bad in a hurry.
Were you conscious for everything?
Yeah. Everything.
He spent a long time in the hospital after the fire. In the midst of his recovery, his mom introduced him to a Japanese man. The man taught him all about bonsai trees, and Ace started collecting them. He filled his childhood room in Chicago with plants and little trees.
Good evening, commissioners, and thank you for allowing me to come speak.
Lane's team did most of the presenting to Eagle County's commissioners. He sat quietly as members of the community either criticized or praised his project. Here's Ellie Taylor. She owns a small business in the Mid-Valley.
None of my friends, none of my colleagues want this. We want to preserve and protect why we live here.
Lane says he understands the fear of growth. But development, he says, can solve problems for people commuting hours each day up and down the valley.
They can spend more time with their family, because there's less time on the road, less traffic on the road, closer to work.
Now that the tree farm project has gone forward, ACE's wetlands are destined to become open space. But people living at the tree farm won't be able to come and explore them whenever they want.
Then it'd be overrun. It'd be too much.
The tree farm now moves forward into a third round of approvals, which could take an entire year.
July in Aspen is peak tourist season. As part of a monthly series on Roaring Fork wildlife, Elizabeth Stewart-Severy checked in on some visitors from the South who are in the middle of some critical work this summer. It's time for migratory birds to stretch their wings.
If they've come here from somewhere else, they've come here to nest, and they should have young by now.
Jim Kravitz walks the grounds of the Aspen Center for Environmental Studies with open ears, listening carefully for bird calls. He's the director of naturalist programs for ACES, and he's spotted a small bird perched in a cottonwood.
And you see a fledgling bird. A fledgling bird usually is sitting, it looks pretty cute and a little bit fluffy. It's got a short tail, and it's pretty helpless, but they're out of the nest, and they're out of the nest for good.
Which means often, as these birds learn to fly, they spend some time on the ground. This is prime time for learning the hard work of survival.
Typically, the parents are bringing it food. They're teaching it where to find food. They're teaching it how to get away from danger, get away from predators, where to hide, and they're learning to be a bird. It's basically those awkward teenage years that they're going through.
And like some human teenagers, a good place to hide and take refuge can be key.
A lot of us in our yards, we cut down the brambles at the bottom of our trees, but that's where fledgling birds love to hide. And underneath the tight branches of a spruce tree, underneath there, that's where they can be safe. A lot of times when we manicure our yards, we get rid of that space. So that's why they seem so helpless. They're all around and nowhere to go, nowhere to hide.
Nesting is a vulnerable time for birds, and fledglings have to learn to avoid all kinds of predators, including other birds like magpies, raccoons, and house pets. And then it's about gaining strength through the summer for the flight back south.
Well, the birds, first of all, have to gain enough fitness so that they can put on the muscles and the feathers to make the journey, because it's a long journey.
Most of Aspen's summer birds are insect eaters, even the hummingbirds, and food source is what drives the timing of their migration.
So as long as they can find insects around here, they'll stay here. It's not that it's too cold.
For some species, the trip home starts in mid to late August, and for others, it'll happen later into the fall. But just like anyone else with a favorite family vacation spot, there's a chance those same birds might be back again next year.
They have a lot of affinity to a nesting site and will come back year after year. And then the young of those will come back in the same area as well, often.
The classic Aspen repeat visitors. Only next year, they'll find a nest of their own. Elizabeth Stewart-Severy, Aspen Public Radio Environment Desk.
You're listening to Mountain Edition from Aspen Public Radio News. I'm Claire Woodcock. If you missed the first part of today's show, you can find a podcast on our website, aspenpublicradio.org. While you're browsing our site, make sure to sign up for ForkFed, our weekly digital newsletter. ForkFed arrives in your inbox every Friday, catching you up on the week's news in a fun and informative way. And thank goodness for ForkFed, because that just totally... It sums up the week for me.
Yeah, definitely. It does it in a clever way. The headlines are always, Barbara Platts, our digital content manager, is an extremely good writer. She has funny, kind of quick summary of what happened this week.
Oh, she does such a good job. And she always finds the extra photos and quotes that we weren't always able to fit into our stories.
Right, right. Yeah, it's sort of a nice way of kind of supplementing the news coverage that you get every single week. And of course, you have a whole local news team at your disposal. I am based in Carbondale. I cover from Basalt down to Glenwood Springs and try and bring you the best coverage possible on the issues affecting those towns. And of course, Claire, you have one single beat. You are strictly the arts and culture reporter.
I am strictly the arts and culture reporter, but I get to travel all over the place to bring you the stories that are happening in this valley that pertain to performing arts, fine arts, literature, food.
Do a little bit of everything. To continue to support journalism like this, give us a call here at the station, 920-9000, or visit us online, aspenpublicradio.org. A group of mothers, childcare providers, and representatives from local nonprofits met with Carbondale's Board of Trustees on Tuesday night. They want the town to create zone districts that allow for child and daycare. Child care in the Roaring Fork Valley is severely lacking. At the Blue Lake Preschool, which has facilities in Elgibel and Carbondale, there are 75 people on the waiting list, and that's just for infant care. The trustees plan to send the issue to the town's Planning and Zoning Commission.
Facing opposition to its water rights to build dams on Castle and Maroon Creeks, the city of Aspen is now under contract to buy land as an alternative site for a reservoir. Elizabeth Stewart-Severy reports.
City Manager Steve Barwick says the municipality is under contract to buy two properties in Woody Creek, totaling about 63 acres. The price tag is $2.65 million and will eventually be charged to water customers. The city is also in talks with Elam Construction, which owns an adjacent gravel pit. The city faces opposition from 10 organizations and people in water court after it filed to keep rights to build dams on Castle and Maroon Creeks. Barwick says he hopes for a settlement that would involve moving those rights to this new location.
There would not be any abandoning of water rights. We would be moving the water rights from one site to another.
The due diligence process is underway, including an analysis of the geology of the site. Barwick says the city will present a settlement option to the opposing parties in early August. First, Aspen City Council will discuss how much water the town needs at a meeting on Monday at 5 p.m. Elizabeth Stewart-Severy, Aspen Public Radio Environment Desk.
The city of Aspen is coming up with solutions to support businesses affected by the upcoming Glenwood Springs Grand Avenue bridge closure. Allison Bechtesh reports.
The closure is expected to add hours to commuters' daily grind. The months-long project begins on August 14th, right at the time that the Aspen-Pickens County Housing Authority's Marolt Ranch property empties of music students, but before winter season workers show up. The city is offering 20 temporary units to businesses who can then rent them to employees. Assistant City Manager Barry Crook says the theory is that avoiding lost man hours may be worth the cost for Up Valley employers.
It's an added expense, and the question will be how many employers will want to take on that added expense.
Crook calls the bridge closure a special circumstance and does not foresee the city getting into short-term rentals in the future. Allison Bechtesh, Aspen Public Radio News.
This summer, the Aspen Music Festival and School has 169 pianos being moved from venue to venue, all of which need tuning. Claire tracked down the piano technicians and brings us this report.
Thomas Malone listens to this all day long. It's the soundtrack to his life. Just him and pianos, week in and week out. He's the Aspen Music Festival and School's head piano technician. He says the pianos usually start off in pretty rough shape.
So they're all shipped out of the eastern United States. So they come out here and they just dry out like crazy and go flat for a month.
Malone, who doubles as a self-proclaimed weatherman, says it's imperative that tuners are sensitive to the climate in which the pianos live. But it's easier now that school's been in session for a month. Today, tuning one piano with 240 strings takes about an hour. As the season pushes on, Malone says the pianos grow higher in demand.
Everybody wants the pianos all the time, right? And so then there's no time to work on them.
Malone's only been working on this piano for about 15 minutes, but students are already beginning to flood into Hearst Hall on the Buxbaum campus. Still, Malone keeps tuning.
It's kind of like solving a puzzle every day, or five times a day. All the notes, all the frequencies have to fit in their right place, and when you show up, they're not.
So he puts the puzzle pieces together with his crew of piano tuners, who are dispatched from campus to Harris Concert Hall, where Justin Holcomb, a professional piano techie, bunkers in the piano room, prepping concert pianos for the guest artists.
As the artists come by, we will make them a little more individual to the artist, how they like it.
Holcomb is a third-generation native to Denver and has piano tuning in his blood. His father has been the tuner for the Colorado Symphony for over 35 years. Growing up, Holcomb was really into tearing apart and rebuilding these instruments.
I kind of thought that artists were a little pretentious, and I wanted to stay away from them.
When he was 18, he tuned his first piano for David Bowie's pianist, Mike Garson, which fascinated him.
I actually grew into the way that they talk and found that they're not as pretentious as I thought they were.
Holcomb has since tuned pianos for dozens and dozens of artists. Over the years, he says he's learned to be a security blanket for the stars.
They're like a fighter pilot. They can never feel that it's their fault because then they'll crash and burn. You are their security. So once you can get rid of your own ego, and that's what I really found, was they may have an ego, but they need it.
His ego, on the other hand, he had to let go of. And for him, that's been a lifetime pursuit.
Your heart hurts. It can make you drop into your stomach when somebody doesn't like something you worked so hard on.
Comes showtime, he's still on duty. Holcomb sits in the audience, analyzing his work, listening for any possible inaccuracies that could be traced back to him.
Best scenario is to sit through the concert, everything goes great.
And usually it does. Holcomb gets a copy of the recording afterwards that he can listen to on his own time, where he finally can sit back, relax, and enjoy the show.
That's all for this week's Mountain Edition. I'm Wyatt Orm.
And I'm Claire Woodcock. To hear this show again or subscribe to our Mountain Edition podcast, head to our website, aspenpublicradio.org.
Tune in tomorrow for live broadcasts of the 2017 Aspen Security Forum. We'll take you to the Aspen Institute at 10 a.m. for A Deal is a Deal, which will delve into the Iran nuclear deal. Then at 3:45, we'll bring you the session, Congress's Role in the Making and Execution of National Security Policy in the Age of Trump.
Thanks for listening. Mountain Edition is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.
Thanks so much for tuning in to Aspen Public Radio, broadcasting KAJX Aspen and KCJX Carbondale. It's our 2017 Summer Pledge Drive. I'm here in the studio with Claire Woodcock.
And one really awesome thing that all of us here at the station are doing during this particular pledge drive is we are live broadcasting the 2017 Aspen Security Forums. And that just goes to complement the
23 hours
content that we broadcast live from Aspen Ideas Festival.
Yeah. We've also been bringing you live broadcasts from the McCloskey Speaker Series. We also had a live broadcast of Elena Kagan, the Associate Supreme Court Justice, who is here.
These are such powerful voices that you're getting to hear. If you love this community service that we are providing, please call 920-9000 or donate to our secure website, aspenpublicradio.org. All dollars matter right now.
That's right. Any contribution you can make will help us achieve our goal. Even if you were to call in with $10 a month, become an Evergreen member, and make a monthly contribution, that's gonna go a long way. If lots of people do this, it's going to go a long, long way. Give us a call, 920-9000. Go online, aspenpublicradio.org.
And thank you.